Rod Hechner and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I'm not in LA anymore.
You are not in LA.
I'm home. My twins are home for a few days anyway.
Yeah. Mother's, the kids are back in town.
Mother's Day coming up. Yeah, I'm glad.
Yep, you got Mother's Day coming up. Yeah. You guys did some movie watching over the weekend.
We did.
You know, you told us a great story about your brothers and
Kentucky Derby.
An old friend of his winning the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
Listen, it's wonderful time of the year. You got playoffs happening.
Good for sports. The Rays are rolling.
The Rays are playing very good.
Yeah. I try to watch a little bit each day just because I don't really know the game all that well. I mean, I played a lot of baseball growing up and I coached a lot, but this is another level. And it's nice just to be an average fan. Yeah, I don't lose any sleep when they lose a game. Doesn't happen very much anyway. They're amazing.
Well, is it? That's funny that you bring that up. Like, because I feel like that's, you know, I've gotten to that point in my life as well. Largely because of what I do for work now, but also just as you age and mature. You know, when I was in my teens and early 20s in college, like living and dying with losses, David. Yeah. Like it would ruin the day. If my team, like, right, they'll be like football when you have like less games to play. So, as you know, Florida Gator fan growing up, right, college football, I'm like, all right, national championship year. If we lose a game, the day is ruined. And I'm just like, at some point, I was like, what? Who the fuck cares if they lose a game or not? Like, why is my day now over because people I don't know lost the game?
All right. I have the same story. Actually, with the Florida Gators and your beloved city. When my wife turned 30, right around there, I surprised her with a trip to New York City. Mm-hmm. I don't think she had been to New York City. I don't remember anymore if it was this trip or a different trip. But either way, I told her to pack. It was October. I told her to pack warm. It was actually later than October. I told her to pack warm clothes and cold clothes. I didn't want to know where we were going. Mm-hmm. And so we get to the airport. Only when we got on the plane did she know we were going. And we saw Stomp. We saw we didn't see Rent. We saw that before. Smokey Joe's Cafe on Broadway. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Went to Gotham, amazing restaurant. Mm-hmm. And on the set, we stayed in a nice hotel, but there's, you know, some of these hotels, especially back in the, this was in the 90s, the rooms were very small in New York City.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, but whatever. I made this amazing, gorgeous woman on her birthday trip to New York City watch an Alabama-Florida football game. We were number one in the country. And a guy from Tampa, a longtime NFL player named Daryl Jackson, I coached some of his teammates in high school. They won a state championship in basketball. He fumbled the punt. We never should have fielded the punt. Mm-hmm. Alabama recovered it, scored like in the final play of the game. We lost, and it destroyed me. And that was the night we saw Stomp and went to – that was during the day. But I made this woman sit with me and watch it. I'm like, what am I doing? That was it. I quit. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm in my 20s, nearing 30 probably.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was definitely over 30 because Chrissy turned 30. So I'm older than her by a couple of years. I quit. I'm like, from now on, I don't care about I don't know these people. I root for people.
Right, yes.
Not for teams anymore. Yes. I mean, I want my mom and my brothers to be happy when the Gators win. That's fine. But I just root for people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of like what we do now, right? Like you make so many relationships in this business. So that's what I want. So guys that I meet around the league and whatever, I want them to do well. Whether their team wins or not, I'm like, whatever. Like, you know, but like I want things to happen for them.
If it's a player that I'm helping or a player I care about, I get stressed a little bit if they're not doing well.
Sure.
If the player I'm helping, it's bad. Like you don't want to be in a room with me when they fuck up. Like one of my guys yesterday just committed a really stupid fucking foul and I didn't break the TV or anything, but don't sit with me at a Florida State basketball game.
When you're watching Max,
we have to turn the volume off. We play Sade music and settle me down.
I like it.
And if it's a nighttime game, even during the week, I might have a cocktail just to chill out, David. You're not coaching the team. Yeah, I'm looking forward to when he graduates. Forget for once and for all, and
so that you're done. No more of this.
Don't worry about college sports anymore. Yeah, but I don't know how fans do it. I don't like the roller coaster.
Yeah, you like the merry-go-round, right? Like it's just the highs and lows are just too much. Like yes, I get the joy. Like when you win, it feels so good. But man,
it doesn't feel good to me. That's the problem.
Yeah, you go on NBA Twitter and you're like, God, you guys, like it's like so funny. We talk about them all the time. It's like Warriors Twitter. You guys have won fucking four titles. Like, why are you angry about
right?
Whatever. Like,
yeah, people are calling for Kerr's job.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man.
Fucking Sam Mitchell. Come on, man.
So, yeah, I said forget it. I want no part of that anymore in my life. But we are lucky that we are in this business. We get to watch amazing playoff basketball. David, we had some great games on Sunday, and we're going to start with the nightcap game. The series is now tied 2-2. Phoenix winning both their games at home now. They head back to Denver for game 5 on Tuesday. The headline, of course, from the story is Devin Booker and his assault on the first 9 games of the playoffs.
When you said assault, I got confused.
Yeah, his offensive assault on the game of basketball. 36.8 points per game, 7.4 assists on 62, 51, 87 shooting splits. His efficiency numbers are 67 effective field goal and 71% true shooting. I mean, he is on a heater. In his last 2 games, he's missed 9 total shots.
And scored.
Right.
And scored 211 points.
Right. Yeah, right. A billion deep points.
Yeah.
I think, and we talked about this, and by the way, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention KD as his teammate in this. Didn't shoot the ball well the prior 2 games, but like all great scorers, all right, my shot's not falling. I'm going to get to the free throw line. Got to the line again 13 times last night. He's rebounding the ball well, 11 boards last night, 6 assists. Averaging 38-5 in these playoffs, right? So definitely not chopped liver. Not quite the usual efficiency we're seeing, but still finding ways to impact the game and defensively help side blocks do amazing things. Chris Paul being injured, I think, is such an interesting thing for this team. We talked about it on our call this morning because we love Chris Paul, the point guard. We think he's incredible. But Chris plays at a certain pace. And that pace plays into what the Nuggets want the Suns to do on offense. But with Booker, off makes, off misses, they're just getting into their stuff faster and quicker. And it's really helping this team and it's super juicing them. And I think it's really about the evolution of Booker and what's happened with this game, Dave. You remember early in his career on those 18 and 20 win teams, he was a de facto point guard in many ways and they were bad, but you always talk about reference points with players. Well, he got points, right, of learning this shit ain't working. Like, I need to be better at this thing. I need to be better at pick and roll. And then, of course, having Chris Paul be here the last few years, playing alongside that guy and learning from him, I just think what we're seeing from Booker has just been masterful these postseason. And we lose track because he's been in the league so long, came in at 19. He's only 26, and this is only his 3rd time in the postseason.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. It's how bad Robert Sarver was. I almost don't even know where to begin.
There's so much.
He's someone that I've been recently targeting as a teaching tool for my younger players, including high school kids now, because I'm helping them in this new business I have. Business.
Yep.
But also NBA players and college players that are high level, like NBA prospects. His skill level, his strategy. That's a really. Like, we don't think about this often enough. I asked a player recently who's really loyal to me. I said, what is it? What am I doing to help you so much? And it's a genuine question because you don't really know. And it's different for everyone. I once had a player that I spent so much time teaching. He was a high school kid. And he ended up, his high school coach told him, you're just a Division III player. Well, I trained him for 2 years and we had like, major, like 3 of the 4 teams, his finalist schools were final four teams in his career. The one he went to didn't make the final four. The other 3 did. Okay, he actually got hurt. But he said, you just helped me with my confidence so much. Fine. Like, I really was hoping he would say my pick and roll teaching, whatever. He said it was confidence. And it's him for everyone.
Right.
So I asked this player the other day, and he said, among other things, that you helped me strategize so much better about the game. And that's what I love about Booker. I think he's really scientific about how he goes about it. And he talks about it a little bit. These guys don't have to give you every secret, and nor should they. You can see it in transition, super aggressive because he knows the trap is coming. Mm-hmm. The doubles are coming, which is incredible because Kevin Durant's on the team. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But trapping Durant doesn't really help a lot.
Right.
He's not shaking and baking you as much as Booker might. Mm-hmm. He'll shoot over you guys. So they're trapping Booker. Maybe that'll change now. And so it's smart for him to be uber aggressive in transition, not just because the trap can't come, but also it can't come easily. And also because it's not so obvious who should come. Mm-hmm. You're distorted a little bit defensively in transition. Guys are trying to figure out, where's my guy, but who's the threat? I can't run away from the rim if Jokic, well, in this case, Ayton's there. Mm-hmm. And yet I'm a guard, so I shouldn't be on Ayton. So you have a lot of things going on. And Booker is picking those spots really well, I think, and not over-penetrating. Mm-hmm. But he is getting to the basket. Mm-hmm. He is not just getting second box shots, mm-hmm. side floaters, which he's got some of those. He's getting the basket too. And, I mean, he's just got an arsenal. So you've got some guys early in their career that might have one really good scoring move, and then maybe a counter to that. Booker's got multiple scoring moves and multiple counters, and he can shoot the three. Mm-hmm. His handle gets him wherever he wants to go. Really, I told you guys today, he's like a man in full. You've heard this saying, a woman in full. I think it's mm-hmm. a movie or a book. Mm-hmm. This is a guy at the peak of his game.
Yeah,
athletically, mm-hmm. basketball wise, mentally. As he ages, the athletic athleticism will come down. His mental capacity will go up. His craft might even improve some until ultimately everything kind of goes away. You know, as we're seeing LeBron, who's amazing, but the LeBron of 8 years ago, they're champions, my opinion.
Easy.
By a lot. No one's touching them. Mm-hmm. He took far lesser teams than this stat team he's got mm-hmm. to finals and championships. Mm-hmm. So Booker is, I mean, if you think of who is at their absolute peak in basketball? Start going through the best players in the game. AD, no, because he's injured too often.
Right. It's him. It's Booker. It's Jokic, right? Like
Booker, Jokic, Giannis, probably not. Right, maybe dropped a tiny
a little bit. Right? Yeah. Embiid's maybe. Always hurt.
Tatum, kind of not quite mm-hmm. where he was, mm-hmm. although Tatum should be there. Brown, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. it's, you know, Ja's not there yet. Ja's still ascending.
He's ascending. Yep.
Yeah. Maybe Tatum is too. But Booker's there.
Yeah.
And it's just an incredible sight to see. I wasn't a huge fan when he came out. I don't really know him very well. I've grown to really respect him greatly.
It is. You know, it's funny you mentioned the scientist and how he's studying. So you mentioned what he's doing in the full court and on transition. And you can see it. David, he's also inviting the double team in the half court.
Yeah, he's slow.
Because he knows where it's coming from. And he made this Jokic-esque pass to the opposite side. He was on the right corner of the court. Waited for the double to come. He saw where the rotation was going to be. He knew Landry's going to be wide open. So not even the skip to Durant to Landry. He said, forget that. I'm going straight across to Landry, wide open. And Landry hit shots yesterday, 5 of 8 or 9 from three, which is fantastic. It's just you're seeing someone who gets it. It's starting to click. You know, players always say the game's slowing down. And you're like, oh, yeah, it's starting to slow down for him. Like
it's on rewind for Booker.
you can. He's like, no, I know.
He already knows what's happening. He's backing up and then playing. It's funny. And I'm writing a piece, as you know, mm-hmm. on Booker this week, I think. Probably today and tomorrow. And, you know, Henry made a point this morning. The Suns, 4 days ago, like, who thought they could be 2-2?
Right.
I mean, it was obviously possible.
Of course, yeah.
But it didn't look likely. Mm-hmm. I love that part of the narrative.
Yes.
You know, I once had someone, Gerard, say to me, this is a Hall of Fame high school coach, said to me, he's older than me by maybe 10 years. He said, I wish I had the confidence you had as a coach. This guy, and he was probably a much better coach than me, at least, you know, 5-on-5 anyway. And the truth is, I'm confident. I'm supposed to be confident. I'm not so confident, but I'm not supposed to be confident, I think, anyway. I don't know what's going to happen in these playoffs.
Right.
I have some ideas as to what might happen, as opposed to maybe the average fan who may not even know that. But there's a lot of so-called experts out there who just are sure of this and sure of that. And
right.
Like, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Like there is no black and white in this.
No.
There's so much gray. Landry Shamet.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had no
minutes. He was getting 0 minutes.
Right. This is my point. Yeah. There's so many variables and the team that can maybe find a rhythm and stay with it mm-hmm. has a big advantage. It helps to have Booker and Durant.
For sure. For sure.
There's a lot of margin for error with those two cats.
You know, and I understand, David, in ways why I'm not even going to talk about media heel, but like how fans can like get crazy about a team going down 0-2 or up 2-0, right? Because by definition, playoffs are small sample size, right? You lose 2 or 3 in a row in the playoffs. If you lose 3, it's not good, right? You're probably going home, right? You lose 2 in a row, you're probably down 0-2, right? So that's... Right, because you don't have, we got 60 more games to play. No, I may only have two more games to play. So I get the urgency and the nervousness that, or anxiety that sets in from, oh my God, we just lost 2-0. Yeah, because you might go home now. But these guys, you know, been in the playoffs, a guy like Durant's been down 0-2 before. Like, you're like, all right, we got to go home. Let's win one game. They won game three. All right, let's win. Now we're back level now. So now what does it become? Best of three, right? Like, who can get to four out of the next three games? That's the goal. And we always say, winner of game five in a tied 2-2 series is going to go on to win 90 whatever percent of the time.
We say it because that's the stat. Right. I don't know what the stat is, right. But
I think it's about 96%, something like that.
Yeah. Listen, if you're Denver, you've got Jokic.
Yes. Who, by the way, was excellent last night. 53 points.
Excellent does not do. Give me a better word than that. This is not old Jerod. This is new Jerod.
Sublime.
Yeah. Otherworldly.
He was.
Otherworldly. 53?
53.
Come on.
And the shots he was making, and a point you made up was Durant's commentary about him in the post game. He's like, I kind of don't like when Jokic makes shots because you think, oh, it's so unorthodox. Left hand, nah, it's going to miss. Fuck, it goes in. Like,
he was really complimentary of him, right?
Very complimentary of him. Well, because greatness knows greatness, right?
Hey, Dylan Brooks, like, it's okay.
It's okay.
I may have told you this story once before where I was coaching a very good high school team. We had won like 17 straight games, and we were one of the best teams in the state. We were playing in a tournament. On the road in a neutral site, but in the city of a team in Orlando that we were playing. And a bunch of our young cats were just like talking so much noise about this other team, who mostly had white players. Mm-hmm. They were a very good team. And our best player, who had been around the country competing at the highest level events, he's like, you dumbasses, like, it don't matter.
Yeah, these dudes can ball.
I know these guys. Some of them played the circuit with me. Mm-hmm. Like, no, these guys can really play. We'll be fine. Well, we got beat. Yeah. It was the first loss of the year. It was a good lesson for our guys.
Good learning lesson.
The best players normally have the most respect.
Yes, because they know.
Like, I saw Draymond Green picking AD up off the ground in game
four. He sure did.
He reached out, picked him right up.
He sure did.
Like, you don't want to, don't poke the bear.
It's
like, why? Why would you do that?
I mean, Durant talking about Jokic is like, look, that Jokic Murray two man game is almost unstoppable. We know we're not going to shut them guys down. Like
he said, I didn't hear that.
He's
part.
Like, we're not going to shut those guys. You're just not. But it's blackjack, right? You have to figure out, okay, what can we take away? What can we get an advantage here, there? Yeah. Like,
you're trying to deal as many 16s as possible, and you know that even a 12, 13, 14, these guys are going to draw the right card plenty of times.
They will.
This isn't the Charlotte Bobcats.
Right? They're not the Hornets. Charlotte Hornets. The Pistons. Yeah. No. Yeah. That's what I always say, right? You're not playing those crap teams. These guys are awesome. Jokic is a two-time MVP for a reason. Like, he's really good at basketball.
Should have been three-time, but that's
should have been three-time. But, you know, listen, happy for Embiid. Kudos to
It wasn't like they gave it to some bum.
Well, if any one of those three guys won it, as we said, we're like, okay. Like, they were excellent this year. A final point I have about Booker, and I just love it. It's a story I bring up all the time, but it's the one you told me about his workout. And, you know, you're playing King of the Court or whatever the game is. And, all right, but we got to work out these other guys, though. So you got to get off now. He's like, fuck that. You said you get off when you miss shots. I haven't missed. I'm staying. Like, look, every guy in the NBA is competitive, right? You're not going to make it in this league if you're not. But, David, I think that competitiveness, the early losing and the lessons from that, he carries himself, David, in such a mature fashion. Look, it's very odd to say on a team with Chris Paul and with Kevin Durant, who's historically the greatest player of those three, this is Devin Booker's team. And he's acting and comporting himself like it is. And they all, KD's like, we're rolling with Book. However Book leads is what we're going to do. And I think that's an important step for, again, he's young, 26, with this 26-year-old young man to really experience in this league.
Yeah, KD reminds me of Curry when KD was there. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think KD learned a little bit. Not that KD, he was the newcomer in both situations, but he's the better player.
For sure.
Although Booker's playing better right now, not by a lot. I think Curry taught KD, like, there's a way to do this and still eat all you want.
All you want.
And KD's so gifted at that. And Booker has handled it well.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, so far anyway, Denver's helped him. Mm-hmm. By not making it hard enough on him, probably.
Let's talk about that. Nuggets. So, Monty, surprisingly, you know, we said all year, oh, that number five starter. We're like, yikes. What are they going to do? Josh Okogie, Torrey Craig. And honestly, whatever Monty decided in that fifth spot, you're giving up one side of the floor for the other, right?
For the other, right.
So, okay, Okogie can guard, but he cannot make a shot. Craig can hit shots, can't guard as well as maybe he once could. And so this was your challenge. Monty said, screw that. I'm going all offense today. And that helps because now with the space, you can't just leave Landry alone. Landry will make open jump shots. All right, that's one person now away from the corner and spacing. And I think that's what most fans, I think, don't realize, David, because these guys are so great. A guy like KD can hit shots in crowds, but it's better to play basketball in space, yes? Like, you want space.
Yeah, for sure, especially for anyone that wants to have a chance to drive. And Durant, as you said, Phoenix after game two, it just hadn't been shooting threes or free throws. And so KD is probably their best free throw magnet. Ayton's not. Booker, to some degree, is, but he's small. And he's not super athletic. No. He's just crafty. So normally Kraft can draw fouls, but sheer power and athleticism draw more because guys just have to grab you and whatever. It really happens all the time. So they've kind of found a way to mesh. And Monty, it worked out this time. If Landry doesn't play as well, you know, you got to keep rotating guys. At least they've got some. Cleveland couldn't find a guy to play the fifth spot.
They put in Terrence Ross. They put in, right? Like, just anybody who can shoot and create a little. That's someone the defense has to honor as opposed to
shoot a
literally. Oh, this guy's in the game. I don't even care. Turn around. I'm not worried about him. And this helps. And so now
you sound like AD.
We'll talk about him in a minute. Oh, Jermichael Green. Yeah, whatever. I'm not going out there. You know, in these two games, I thought Malone did not go to his bench enough, and he could have probably done some other things. I wonder, too, you win your first two games at home doing what you do. Does that lull you into a sense of, what we got is fine. It's just going to keep working, right? You always say, just because it worked in game two doesn't mean it's going to work in game three. And I feel like maybe Mike didn't try to figure out, let's see if I can get some more minutes for Christian Brown. Let's see if I can get who's the athletic wing they have on the bench that hasn't played at all. This postseason, young kid
for
Denver. I got to pull up.
Not Christian Brown because he's
not Christian Brown. I'll pull it up in a minute. But not playing Thomas Bryant, right? Like different things they can do to get other.
Reggie Jackson's not playing.
Reggie Jackson's not, right. It's like he's pretty good on ball with juice, right? Like, so maybe he might do that in game five now because now game five is like suddenly a must win for both teams.
Not as must win for Phoenix as it is for Denver. Could Denver win the last two? Sure. But it's what I've been afraid for Denver for a while now is they just have their non-Jokic minutes are a killer. Mm-hmm. Like the three guys that came off the bench got murdered, all double figures.
Zeke Nagy is who I was thinking of who hasn't gotten any.
Yeah. Play Zeke, play Thomas. Mm-hmm. I mean, Thomas has had great games against Phoenix before. Mm-hmm. He had great games against the Nuggets. They fucked that up a month and a half ago. Zeke Nagy was hurt, came back. They played him some instead of Bryant. Then they don't play him. And so they're stuck with what they're stuck with. And I think it's a shame. And I think it's what I've always been worried about Denver. And it's coming to fruition right now.
Yeah. You rightfully so. You said, okay, Malone. And I said at the beginning of the season when we did our beginning of the series, when we did our preview, I said, this is going to be a coaching series. Which coach makes adjustments, does different things, right? Neither to me and my eyes are great at it or do it a lot. And when I say great, they're not Ty Lue and Eric Spoelstra, right? Who were like, again, we're going to just whatever works. They don't seem to do that. Monty doing it a little bit more than Mike Malone. And so is Malone going to eventually do that? No, we'll find out as time goes on. He's going to have to. There was a stat on one of those, NBA Twitter accounts about players and what they're doing on both sides of the floor. And it's pretty cool, right? So you see the players in tears. Devin Booker is all the way to the right by himself on Devin Booker Island, right? In like the highest tier of like playing well on both sides of the ball. Then the next group, Nikola Jokic, all by himself. And then, the names you start knowing. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Jimmy Butler. Okay. And then on the left side.
Tier 7.
Yes, playing terribly. Dylan Brooks and DeAndre Ayton.
Right, that was before game four. So he did better, not great, eight better. Rebounds, better on defense. Ayton left game three without talking to the media. People thought he was mad at Monty. He handled it well.
I would have taken me out too. Like, there's professional pride there, right? Like, he knows.
Good for you, DeAndre.
I did not play well. And when you don't play well, like, you're going to feel some type of way about it. Usually bad, right? And he knows I was bad. But what am I going to do? I can't. If I'm playing poorly, I can't play in this game. And that's what happened. Lonsdale was giving them. And that he's been someone, David. Again, you look at his box stats. People are going to be like, what's this guy do? And it's noisy, but still, playoffs are small sample size. Highest plus minus on the team yesterday, plus 16. He does play with Booker and Durant always, so that helps. But his activity and the ferocity he plays with is something that clearly Monty needs and the team needs that he's not getting from Ayton, and Jacques is giving it to them. And it's like, hey, man, we don't have time to worry about feelings right now. If Jacques's giving it to us, he's going to play. And I think, too, when he gets the ball, which is why I think Biyombo's not playing. You mentioned this, right? He's a little bit smarter about what to do with the ball when doubles come.
I'm only guessing. I have not studied it yet, but I'm guessing, that he's not better in defense.
No.
Maybe they feel like he needs to be on the perimeter more. And Jacques is better than
Biyombo.
Than Bismack, mm-hmm. who's a good paint protector. And then offensively, possibly. I'm just guessing that because of the doubles coming for Booker, they want other guys to read the game better. Maybe even make a play with the ball. That's my guess anyway.
Yeah. But it's, this is, we talk about all the time, stars matter, of course, but secondary and role players matter. And if you don't have those guys, or if you don't build trust in them throughout the season, you're not going to be able to count on them come postseason time. It just won't work. And so kudos to Monty's guys for finding ways to play well. All right, David, the first game on Sunday, overtime. Sixers-Celtics. That series also tied up now at two games apiece. Well, we're going to get to whether or not you call timeouts late in games in a minute. But first, just a extraordinary Harden game. He's been really good. Like in the games that he's played really, really well in, he's had some awesome, awesome playing. He's shooting the three well, playmaking. At the end of that game, Joel double teamed. He makes the pass out to Harden, catch and shoot. No, didn't even hesitate. No dribble, no nothing. Just put it up. They went up by one, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, with that three.
Yeah.
He was just great. And he had the floater at the rim at the regulation to put the game into overtime, which was, again, outstanding. And, James Harden's a guy who, in his prime, this is an MVP. he's he had that moniker for a few years. He's that good. But it was nice for them to see that. And again, this is the stuff of Daryl Morey's fever dreams, right? This is why I got my guy, James Harden, here to do these things. And so look, 2-2, I think we said it, this series is going to go a long week and it's clearly going to go at least six, probably seven. And I am excited. What were your takeaways from the game? And we'll get into late to timeout or not timeout and all that.
I thought that I think Philly's very deep. One of the deeper teams left. James was terrific the whole time. Maxey's trying to get going. Embiid did not shoot well, but I thought he played pretty well. Very active defensively in the paint too. I thought Boston, Jaylen Brown, an amazing start, and then kind of disappeared. Mm-hmm. And that's something a little concerning.
I agree.
What's going on with that? Tatum was terrible to start,
and then 9-12 to finish.
if it'd be nice if they both could play well for three quarters at the same time. Yeah. That's when they're at their best. I thought it'd be a great series. I still think it's going to finish up strong. Harden was so bad in game 2 and 3. So good. Amazing in game 1 and 4. They need to find him a little more. He needs to find more evenness. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he has to be that great for them to win. And maybe if he's playmaking more, maybe someone else
can he do 25 points and 12, 13 assists, right? Like,
Maxey doing better. Their bench guys, Tobias was okay yesterday, wasn't great. Boston is, they can't get there, but that doesn't mean they won't. You never know when Golden State last year really turned it up. Memphis was giving us some trouble. And then, and they were great. Mm-hmm. Then Boston gave them trouble. Then they won three straight and won the championship. Boston's got that kind of upside.
We've been saying this about Boston really since, I'd say they started like taking their foot off the gas sometime around February-ish. And we're like, all right, like what's going on? And I said to you this morning on our call, Boston just doesn't look connected to me. Like they're just kind of like out here, and then we'll talk about the play now. So Harden makes the three. David, you think it was 19 seconds left in the game?
I thought it was at 19 or 17.
Either way, when he hit that last either shot. Way, they had the ball with, they could have held, well, they did held it a little too long. Last shot, right? No one was going to get the ball back because shot clock was off. Okay. Henry, as you know, is a proponent, and the data says no timeouts in those situations. Because for the data says that when you call timeouts, it actually, the expected success for the offensive team goes down. And it makes sense, right? The defense gets a chance to set. We figure out, okay, I'm going to get my right guys in. I know what the matchup is. I know who's where. Randomness, which is what happens, right? After the ball's inbounded, oh, shit, let me go find my guy. And if you're racing and pushing the ball up, you're, David always says, right? When you've got to think multiple things, it's danger time for defenses.
Mistakes.
Exactly. Happen, yeah. And that, when you call the timeout, that allows for less mistakes because you know this is who we're running. We're switching screens. We're not. We're doing whatever it is you're told to do. You know what to do. Okay, they didn't call a timeout. Fine. They're running. All right, Tatum's got the ball. And they just, to your point, until the call this morning, no sense of urgency, right? Like, enough time, 19, but, like, you got to still move with some verve and some pace. They actually run a decent action, right? And a screening action. Get the ball. Tatum said in his postgame, I probably should have gone a second early, and I didn't with my move, right? And so he admitted, I should have done that. They actually got the ball to Marcus Smart, and he ended up making the shot. It's just, well, you were half a second too late.
It would have been cold if that counts. Like, that place was rocking. Yes. Harden hits that three. Yes. If Smart got, I thought it was not good.
Yeah, so did I.
But I've been wrong before, and turns out it was a couple of tenths of a second late. I think that, well, first of all, Smart came down the court and stopped. Right then, I would have called a timeout. Because now, the only thing the timeout gives them is a chance to put in their defensive players. They had a bunch anyway on the court. Smart was on the court. Derek White's on the court. Tatum and Brown on the court. Like, what are you doing anyway? Because the advantage of the randomness that you're talking about is mitigated when you stop. Mm-hmm. And he stopped. So the clock's ticking. You're not sure what to do. They can organize, right? They can organize defensively because Smart stopped, then gave to Tatum. He stopped. They could organize again. And Tatum, actually, I thought, should have shot the ball.
Yeah.
He just did. Embiid wasn't that close to him. He could have got it off. I mean, maybe 35% shot. But better than a 0%. It would have been,
if he could have gotten the shot off, right? And Embiid would eventually rotate. It would have been, what, a second box jumper, maybe?
It would have been just outside the second box. He could have stopped at 10 feet or so.
He can make that, though. That's in his wheelhouse.
For sure he can make it. Embiid wasn't close. And if he leaves, ideally to me, first of all, you want to shoot as fast as you can when you're down one. And he gave a chance to tip and foul. So that was over as soon as Smart stopped. Now you're just hoping to get a shot off, and they didn't. But if you want to get a shot and a chance for a tip, especially off a drive where you draw Embiid over, and now there's a chance to get the tip with the help. And it just didn't happen. And I learned from it, guys, but still, you lost a chance to end the series almost. It wouldn't be over, but
yeah, 3-1 is.
And now it's, to me, it's not anyone's series. I think Boston's a slight favorite, but by all means, Philly can win this.
I mean, once it's 2-2, right, we know this. Anything can happen at this point, right? And clearly, you want to win that game 5, go up 3-2, because now the pressure's all, like, they have to win 2 straight, right, including one on the road. And then if you're the higher seed like Boston is, right, the pressure of, well, shit, we're supposed to go back and win the finals this year. Now we might even get back to the conference finals, right? Those little things matter, and that'll start impacting them potentially in some ways. I'm with you. I think that this series is still going to be exciting. Like, because Boston still has that gear to get to, which they haven't yet, where they can just really turn it up, and it's like, Tatum Brown doing their thing. And I did, post-game, and it's nothing, I don't want to make a big deal about anything, but I just, Jason Tatum was asked, how do you get Jalen Brown more involved? He's like, maybe he's got to push for the ball more, or we got to be more. It's just, the two of them, when they talk, don't sound like they're two stars, like, in sync, right? It's like, yeah, we got a thing going. Like the way Nikola and Jamal Murray talk after a win or a loss, right? Like the way Steph and Draymond, like, they don't seem to be in sync. And again, I'm not out here saying that they have friction or not. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying, for a team that wants to win an NBA title, its two best players don't seem to be simpatico and dancing to the same beat right now, and that's concerning.
I think you're saying you're suspicious.
Well, listen, I spent enough time around Henry. I'm going to get suspicious about everything.
I'm suspicious. We'll see what happens in the offseason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just...
What's ironic is the sports fans in Boston who have clamored for Jalen Brown to be mm-hmm. All-NBA, the more influential mm-hmm. ones, the guys on mm-hmm. podcasts, whatever, they're clamoring for him to get All-NBA so that the Celtics are the only ones that can pay him so that he stays.
Might not make All-NBA.
And that's ironic only because it may not – well, no, he may – the irony would be if he and Tatum end up not really – they just want a divorce.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not saying they do. Last year, we wrote an article that, no, everything's fine. Tatum's just missing shots. But it would be ironic if it turns out they keep him because of the Supermax and they don't want to be together.
Yeah. It's just a little off. And by the way, your 1 and 2 guys aren't to be best friends to win a title. We've seen plenty of examples of that in history where it doesn't matter. Okay. But maybe, you know, he wants some different things there. And by the way, I do love this. You know, you're big on accountability. Brown said after regulation, the Harden catch and shoot 3, that was me. Bad read. He's like, I should not have doubled down at that moment. And I like that. He was like, oh, no, that was my bad. Yeah. Shouldn't have.
I'm a big Jalen.
No, he's fantastic. All right, guys, quick commercial break, and we will be right back. This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey, guys, Gerard from True Hoop here. If you had an extra hour in your day, what would you do? It's a hell of a question. Would you maybe go for a run, take a nap, read a book, or maybe show up for a friend? Now, depending on the day, any one of those would be a great idea. Most of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. But the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Now, I've been open in the past with you guys about this. I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I, and both are extremely helpful in developing positive coping skills and learning how to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TrueHoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TrueHoop. All right, David. The other series, game 4, is tonight. The Lakers have a 2-1 series lead after a beatdown in game 3, which didn't look like that was where it was going. Golden State had a 13-point lead, I don't know, in the second quarter?
Yeah, I don't remember 13. It was 40-29, like 8 to go second quarter. I don't remember if they scored again, maybe 42-29, but... yeah, they were up double figures in the
second. And I was like, uh-oh, not looking good, Lakers. Warriors are going to come in here, take this, and go up 2-1. And then, AD was doing some things. Bron was doing some things. You talked about on our call this morning about how, you know, LeBron, you know, obviously he's 38, so he can't rev it up all the time. But when he does decide to rev it up, that engine still runs pretty hot. He can still chase down some balls and do some amazing things. He just can't do it all the time because he's an old man. We'd be remiss if we didn't point out the play that everyone's talking about where he wanted to chase down and he had to jump into the stands and run up the tunnel. And as David said this morning, us old guys know what that means. He can't stop on a dime. That's why he has to keep running. And it's like, yeah. And when you're a young person, you can easily just and pull up. Those shocks are worn, man. And of course the foot, as we suspect, probably needs surgery. So he has to keep going and then slow himself down as he goes in order to stop moving. And that's a lot of weight to slow down, right? Like, he's a big, big man.
Right.
But I was impressed with the Lakers. And, you know, at this point, this is a compliment to you, I'm no longer impressed by your basketball knowledge because you're very knowledgeable. So when you say things now, I just believe you. You said, guys, the Lakers roster prior was pretty good. This one that Rob Pelinka got, even better. Like, this ain't the problem. The roster is fantastic. And David, their depth, Dennis Schroeder, D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, of course, Rui Hachimura. Like, I thought Rui would eventually, like, all right, this guy's going to start missing shots again. Not Like, he's just, that percentage is just better than what he's been shooting all regular season. This roster is very, very good. And if LeBron and AD, through duct tape, you know, silly putty, spit, whatever, if they can just hold it together and not be Mr. Potato Head, this team could possibly win an NBA championship. Am I crazy?
No, not at all. Yeah, they're super deep. D'Angelo Russell's been amazing the last couple of games. My favorite play of the weekend was the Warriors have some kind of driving action. AD goes to help, and D'Angelo Russell blocks out Looney hard. Like, that was not happening for the Lakers for much of this season. When AD left the paint, or any big left the paint, nobody was cracking back on that big man to keep off the glass. And no surprise, in the playoffs, they've locked that down a little bit better. And I've given Darvin credit for that. You shouldn't need a coach to do it.
Sometimes you do.
Never that he gets the credit. The players know what to do as well. And, they just, you know, we're not going to – it's like Harden, yeah, right, two games in four. He's been amazing. AD, LeBron, like, AD's well, not
been – AD has been on the every other, right? It's every other game is good. So it's like, so we expect him to be bad then tonight based on
– And he's not guarding anybody. And he's, because of that, he's guarding everybody. Mm-hmm. He's in the paint all the time. He doesn't care about Jermichael Green shooting. We said on the show Thursday that the Warriors will try Looney on the bench, Jermichael Green, because he can shoot, but they'll probably get back to their starting five. I still suspect the same. I don't think if they're going to lose, they're going to lose.
And if the Lakers are like, fine, if Jermichael Green makes 40 points a game, then we're losing. Well, that's what we're going to live with. We're not going to live with them other dudes.
Yeah, they're trying to keep AD in the paint as much as possible. There are some counters that the Warriors can. The whole problem for the Warriors is if we allow AD to live in the paint, we can take as many threes as we want because he can't curl protect like he wants to. But that means we're just reliant on our outside shot. And so we're going to lose every game. We don't shoot amazingly well. Not that they can't on the finals to score in the paint. They can. They're doing some of that. But largely, Davis controls the paint. So they don't want to do that. They want to get to the rim more. They want to get to the free throw line more. These are important things to them. And so the Lakers are, you know, they're foiling that because they're leaving AD in there, and he's just a mess.
This is perfect to discuss this. So you have coined the Warriors offense Cuisinart.
I think Henry came up with it.
Okay.
I think so.
But you know, but everyone knows, right? Everyone who has a Cuisinart or some other brand food processor in their house, you put a potato or any kind of thing in there and watch those slices go through, shit's just flying all over the place. That is the Warriors offense, right? Back screens, back cuts, ball movement, player movement. And that makes you tired as a defense, right? Great Hubie Brown. You set screens to make defenders think. Well, you're doing nothing but thinking against the Warriors because everyone is live and constantly moving. But what I noticed, and that is the preferred way that they want to play, that Kerr wants to play, his philosophy, all the things. Here's the thing I noticed, though, over the course of their run and through playoffs, especially as you get deeper in the playoffs. That's how they start out every series. That's how they want to play. Other teams know this is what they want to do and start mucking up and taking away their favorite things. All right. Then we go to our second thing, which is, well, we still have Steph Curry, who's very good. High pick and roll up at the top, right? And let him cook his guy, get in a switch, whatever, one-on-one. That is really against Steve's ethos. He doesn't like that kind of basketball, but they've got a player who can do it. So they do it, and it works often very well. But as a team, I don't know that it's their high comfort zone, right? Because, again, the motion and everybody involved is how they play. And then, when it gets a real late in the series, like a game seven, we saw what we saw against Sacramento. Curry, you're taking 45 shots, and everybody else, just get your ass on the boards and rebound and do whatever, right? That's, of all the three styles, that's probably Kerr's least favorite way of playing basketball. But sometimes you got to just do that. When you got the best player in the series, fuck it. We got to take the advantage. I do think that is interesting, because we always talk about coaches and being pragmatic, and it's a weird sort of like reverse, a devolve that happens with the Warriors. Like, it's like, fine, I guess if I have to play this way, we will. But I don't want to play that way. You notice that with the Warriors?
Well, you can't. Every game, he'll wear down. Yeah. What I saw with the Warriors is I thought they were garbage in executable plays. Mishandling passes at the rim. AD caused a lot of the trouble. He's just so good. Such a presence. Shots that he blocked easily that shouldn't have been taken, fumbled balls out of bounds, overpassing, Jordan Poole just being an abomination, just stupid decisions and turnover.
It's almost like something happened to him at the beginning of the season that might have caused him to not play well. I wonder what it was. Anyway.
Yeah, there's attacks of punching teammates in the head. Draymond's throwing the ball to him a lot now. It's not helping so much. So I'm not counting them out, that's
never,
for sure.
Never.
But yeah, they're road heavy. A lot of options.
It is. And, you know, we mentioned that how many guys besides the, beyond the five does Kerr trust right now, right? Looney, maybe a little.
Yeah, less than what Darvin
does. And this is what you said was always going to be their advantage, but you worry that Darvin would play LeBron and AD too much and not get into his bench. And they got a kind of a nice bonus because of the Warriors not playing well and the Lakers playing better.
Right.
LeBron got, and AD got the fourth, actually a little bit of the end of the third and the whole fourth off because the Warriors couldn't make a run.
That to me was a really big deal. The fact that Golden State couldn't stay connected to the lead, to the score, was a big help to the Lakers getting the rest they need, which will make a big factor possibly in game four.
And it's, you know, you would agree with this. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it'd behoove the Lakers, right, to try to get this series over as quickly as possible, right? Try to get this game tonight and go up 3-1, because the later it goes, because it's every other. There's no 2 or 3 days the rest of this series.
Right. I think you're right.
This thing goes to seven. I don't like their chances, right? Because they're going to play tons of minutes. Those guys are old, so they got to really try their best so they could put the chokehold on the Warriors tonight and go up 3-1.
Every team wants to do that. Golden State shouldn't be so panicked in the paint when AD's there. If they block it, they block it. Like, just play. I think we'll see a better effort from Golden State. Yeah,
and you'll see Looney. They're not going to do that Jermichael Green thing anymore. They're going to go back to.
I don't think so, but I've not read about it yet. Yeah, he'll play, but I think Looney will play.
Draymond Green, as everyone knows, has his own podcast, the Draymond Green Show, creatively enough. He talked about game three, but he gave a lot of love to Steve Kerr on how much he learned about winning from Steve Kerr, who's, you know, from as a player and as a coach, Steve Kerr's won a lot, 9 championships. This guy knows a thing or two about winning titles. And I thought it was great because Draymond, in many ways, is the ultimate winner, right? Does all the things that teams need to win games, but he's still learning how to win.
Well, except for he can't finish
that part, that piece.
He did reputationally, that's who he is.
But he's like, how much he's learned from Kerr. I know you have some thoughts on that. I have some I want to drop to you, but give me your thoughts on what you heard Draymond say.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's a difficult guy to coach, but also an easy guy to coach in that he's going to bring effort all the time. And I think as we age, if you've won a lot with someone, you can see their positives more so than their flaws. And I think that he's gained a newfound respect for how Steve's done it over the years. And even if he isn't being truthful, you want to generate positive karma around the team when you're playing LeBron and AD.
So it's funny that you said even if he isn't being truthful. I'm not saying that he isn't being truthful. What I'm saying is, well, this is a very interesting time for Draymond. He may not be back next season. So he has a player option for next year. Now, if he exercises it, well, he's going to be back unless they trade him, right? Which they certainly can, right? Expiring, whatever. So how much of this is like either engendering goodwill, like, no, guys, I still want to be here, and or saying my goodbyes. This has been a great time. Like, whenever the season ends for us, this is probably going to be it for me here. So that's what I'm watching, because there's going to be changes in San Francisco, regardless of what they do this postseason, that involve Dre and most likely Klay Thompson. So we'll see how that all plays out. That's how I read it anyway.
Yeah, good point.
You wanted to talk about Steve Kerr. You know, he had comments earlier in the postseason about Giannis, when Giannis talked about there's no failure in sports. And Kerr, you know, Kerr had a nice, you know, he's how lucky we are as a league to have a superstar like Giannis, right? Someone who could be the face of the league with that kind of humility and perspective on where we are and what matters in sports. And I know that matters to you so much because we always say, right, coaching, first in the business to inspire, right? Like, that's, yeah, X's and O's and play matters, but none of that's going to matter if I can't inspire the person across from me.
Well, I've never served the military, nor should I probably ever do so. And so I don't know what life and death situation means when there's an enemy. Like, I've been in close calls of dying, like in car wrecks and whatever, or near car wrecks, some very scary ones. But there wasn't the other side trying to kill me. It was just an accident. War is crazy. I don't know how people perform under pressure death if they screw up.
No,
this isn't that. And I really think our job as coaches is to get players build an environment where they can play the best they could possibly play. And so I don't think by setting up an example of it's win or we're dead is helpful. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the case. And I think Giannis is basically saying that in a sense, that you can call the season a failure if you want. People I respect like Zach Lowe said it was a failure. You can label it if you want to. Giannis, it doesn't make sense for them to label it. It only adds angst.
And the game's hard enough as it is. They don't need more stress.
Right, right. At the end of the day, like is he going to remember that series against Miami? Yes. Is he going to remember the series more? Yes. You know, I like that Steve Kerr jumped on it because his job is to create that environment for many players to play as well as possible. Everyone's rowing the same way, the same time and all of that. And recognizing things that Giannis said that have value.
We talk about Kerr a lot and his, you know, how he's one of the better coaches in the league. And so much of what he's brilliant at is EQ, right? His emotional intelligence and just that impact of that influence that he has right now. Of course, he's a veteran team that's won championships, so that makes it a little bit easier. But still, Draymond is a difficult employee, as we've talked about, right? You've got a young guy in Jordan Poole and Jonathan Kuminga who want minutes and who want to do different things, right? So,
yep.
And again, he has his basketball pedigree comes from, right? Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich, right?
Chief 9 rings. Chief 11 rings.
So and he's taken bits and pieces from both of them and figured out and merging them with his own philosophy and his ethos and how he inspires and leads. And I think this is the part about it that I think fans don't often see. They just think, oh, coach, call the timeout and drive a play. Sometimes it's that, but sometimes it's just, hey, man, you know, I think everything's good. Remember to breathe right here. Like you said to Steph in game 7, I'm probably going to get you maybe 2 minutes here, but you know, just breathe. Okay. Like what the fuck are you going to tell Steph Curry? He's already know. He knows, but just, oh, by the way, you might forget this because you're so locked in. Just breathe. We're going to be good. Right. He's not making it seem like, okay, don't worry.
If we lose this season, it's a failure. Oh
my
God,
I'm not going to rush you at all in the second half. I know it's going to be a lot. Like, why am I introducing that into my conversation? All good. Breathe. I'll get you some moments here. We'll still call a timeout here. No problem. Calm. Because these guys, I can only imagine what it's like on the floor in a playoff game. The intense emotions going through your body and mind. Fucking crazy. Now I got this maniac on the sideline yelling and screaming about failures. Like, that's not helping. At least for me. If I was a player, I don't want that. It doesn't help me. It doesn't help me at all.
Right. I should add.
Well, yes. His off-court, conversations. Not
just the old white dudes. Come on, man.
Not our favorite. You of all people. The other series, game 4 tonight. Heat blow out the Knicks in game 3. on our call this morning, David said.
I'm just going to say the Nick. Because there wasn't a team of Knicks that were playing that game.
One player. But David, you know, we do a thing here at True Championship Bus. David emphatically said this morning, Knicks off the bus. They cannot win a championship. And I mean, I'm inclined to agree. Like, first of all, I don't think they have the top end talent too, right? Like, they don't have the guy to like, Julius Randle is good and he hasn't been great this series. And Jalen Brunson, as good as he is, he's not that level guy. And then on the other end, they're just not playing that well, right? Like, so doesn't mean the series is over by any means. They could.
No. They can win the series. Yeah, they still don't have a championship. They're the only team that I don't think has a chance to win. Like, I'd spread my money. I don't bet. But if I did, I'd spread over 7 teams.
For sure. What do you think for them, besides just playing better? Which, because I think sometimes we try to get too, all right, we got to just fucking play better.
Shoot better, defend better, rebound better. They rebounded okay. Both teams, I think, had 13 offensive rebounds last game. Their turnovers were okay. Stop fouling. That's the biggest thing. Stop fouling. He took like 20 more free throws.
Yeah.
Game over. It's like, stop fouling. Make tall up. Make them shoot over you. Stop fouling.
And, you know, we talked about this last show, and I said how the Heat were a bottom three-point shooting team in the regular season, but they're like the best in the postseason. Well, David, they reverted back to the mean last game. They shot poor. Right. Like, you got to win that game. When they shoot 10% or whatever, you got to
blow.
No. And they still got blown out.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Miami's, this is a Spoelstra operation, a Jimmy Butler operation, right? He's like James Bond. Hard motherfucker to kill, man.
He is. I want to talk about Jimmy and Tibbs. There was an article that Nick Friedell on ESPN wrote about, you know, their sort of shared mutual, you know, their relationship. Obviously, Tibbs has coached him in Chicago when they drafted him, coached him in Minnesota. And in the article, Nick said there's a word that Jimmy and Tibbs use with each other, and they both mutually use it. And, you know, it's at the ethos of who they are in this relationship. Fuck. And it's basically just like, fuck you, right? But, like, it is meant, like, in an endearing way, right? But it's also who they are as competitors. Tibbs, as everybody knows, is a grinder as a coach, right? Jimmy, grinder as a player, right? So, of course, it'd be natural those two would love each other, right? Because they just speak the same basketball language, right? They just compete, 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 and do it hard. That's really it.
I did not know this. I'm not proud to tell you.
Why? Why are you not proud? You like guys who compete and play hard.
I've told. No, what I mean is, it's yeah. I have this inner like "fuck you" mentality. I think I told you. I went to go see with my wife and our good friends Charlie and Mandy. He served in the Desert Storm. He's a former went to West Point soldier, and we saw The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the remake, because the original one was based, I think, in Sweden, where that, or maybe Switzerland, wherever the movie takes place, wherever the book takes place. And in the movie, she's wearing a shirt that says, fuck you, you fucking fuck. She's a badass, if you remember the movie.
I have not seen the movie.
Right, you saw the movie? Oh my God, you have to see this movie. It's one of the most incredible, the story is, I didn't read the book, my wife did, and she saw the European version, it translated, amazing. So she wears a shirt, so I just reacted. I don't remember this, but for Father's Day, my buddy Charlie's wife, fuck Mandy, bought me that shirt. It's hanging very proudly in my closet. Fuck you, you fucking fuck. That's pretty much how I go about life. Like, you're all fucking fucks in this day and age, and I will slowly let you into my circle. It used to be so cynical, but in the Trump world we live in now, you're all Trumpers, so you prove otherwise, basically. I'm not proud of it, like I said. So the fact that Thibodeau and Jimmy that way, like, not a great place to be, guys. I need to be better. I need to be better. Yeah. But as a coach, for sure, I'm not that way in life so much. As a coach, I would never show my game face that way. I'm gonna try to always be decent. Never yell at the referees, whatever. When I started coaching again years ago, but yeah, inside. Like,
but all the great players, David, have fuck you inside of them. That's why they're great. They got fuck you. Steph Curry, for as much as he's got fuck you in him, right? There's plenty of fuck you in that dude's game.
Oh my
right?
God. Like, I've talked to some fathers who know their kids well, and I'll say, oh, he's such a nice young man, whatever. But they're like,
killer.
Yeah. The term we use a lot these days is gangster. Like, some agents are gangsters, some coaches are gangsters, some players are gangsters. And I mean that in the way we like gangsters in shows.
Not
like,
in real life, the ones that'll kill us. Not those kinds.
Right. They're not breaking laws and are hurting people, but they're trying to crush their competition.
And you will get crushed.
Yeah. I talked to a player last night. It was his first workout, NBA workout today. He called me late last night. He said, coach, you told me to call you before a workout. I'm calling you. And I just reminded him, like, all that fancy shit you work out with your handle. He's a big 6'9", like 4'3", very talented player. If I went on a great team in college, I said, all that shit's fine and dandy, but you're not any good at it. No. Like, you're years away. You know, you can be Kawhi Leonard one day. That day's not today. Tomorrow. Beat all those guards and wings in the paint like they're like your children. Beat them like they're JV players to your varsity. Beat them up physically. He's 6'9", 7-plus wingspan, strong as hell. Like, they're going to switch screens, bury those guys underneath, take the bigger guys to the perimeter, and keep it simple. You're not good enough to play with the ball against anybody, really. It takes years. So beat them up. It's war. And I tell all – I spoke to a group of guys, group of five or six players the other day when I was in L.A. It's war. Like, you've got to – they want to kill you, and they're not calling fouls. And don't be looking at the referee or the coach or whatever. Don't expect any calls. It's physical.
And that's
combat.
What those teams are looking at, right, coach? And more than anything, yes, your skill, the compete level, right? Like, are you just like out here, like, you know, how badly do you want to compete for this?
Well, they're all going to compete. There's another level of competing. And then you all, the job of the scouts and the executives in the offseason or during the regular season is to evaluate, are they bringing that same energy? Do we see progress as players in season to season? Because that shows the competitiveness to work each day. it's you know, Bobby and I used to always say there's a difference between willing to a will to win and a will to prepare. You have to have a will to prepare, right? So the guys that have the will to prepare, you see progress, mm-hmm. you see improvement, whatever. But ultimately, you got to try to beat the other guy's ass one on one.
That's how you have to look at it. All right, last thing before we go, Coach, a major announcement was made over the weekend. Bronny James has decided where he's going to play college ball in the fall. He's staying home, local. Actually, I do wonder, is he going to stay at home, or is he going to live on campus? I'm very curious how that's going to work out. I hope so, too. It's going to be a level of, you know, hoopla with him on campus.
Well, listen, you can live on daddy's money if you want to. There's enough. But I have a feeling LeBron is doing his best to try to say, go make your own money, which is good. I got you.
NIL. I think right now he's already like $4.5 million. He's like number two. And so he's fine. And let's be real. What is an 18-year-old kid making? That's fine. That's more than enough money. He's perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah. And he's got daddy's financial guys. And I mean that in a bad way, as we all do.
So he's going to SC. He's going to play for Andy Enfield, right? Enfield, who used to coach Florida Gulf Coast, which you. Oh, so you know him well. Perfect. Okay. Because we didn't talk about this before the show.
Yeah. He's really good.
What do you think this is going to look like? Because I know you watch tape on Bronny, and it's hard for someone like me to suss out how much of what I'm hearing is because he's actually gotten better, or is it because it's Bronny James? I know he played in the McDonald's All-American game. He's at Nike Hoop Summit. I know all that. And I see good things. I'm like, oh, this guy's got a feel. What I know when I watch him, he understands the game of basketball for sure. That is very obvious to me. What I want to know is USC is a high major. It's Pac-10 or Pac-12, sorry. Is he good enough to start and play for a team in this league?
So first of all, Pac-12 is a middling conference. It's probably worse than the WCC.
See, you see how old school plays. I'm going back to UCLA is there and this team and that team.
Well, yeah, that's it. That it's top heavy. The other teams suck. Arizona, USC, great. Okay. They all suck. Maybe Washington State's going to be better this year. Their coach is good. Oregon's obviously it's been here and there, but they're not consistent. It's not the ACC, not the SEC, not the Big 12, not the Big East for sure. I think Bronny's got a chance to be really good. He's got to make shots. He's got to make threes to really feel like he's making an impact. Mm-hmm. He could be an excellent defender, decision maker. They signed the best backcourt guard in the country, so they'll probably play together. He'll be on the ball, off the ball. He's been off the ball before too, mm-hmm. and he's a good dude. I like his personality very much. Good shooting coach. Bronny is a good shooter. He can be a better shooter for sure. He's got to handle himself. He's got to deal with failure. He's not really done that. No one's watching like they're going to be watching now. He's got to deal with failure well because he's got to fail some. And that'll probably help a lot with that, which is good. You know, nothing wrong with that. And Andy will put him in good positions. If USC can make an interesting run, then he'll go pro in here. Which is
overall. You like it. You like upside. Looks good. You like it.
Yeah, he was fine with wherever he went. They're all fine. They're all Nike schools.
Well, because I think he's like, ranked 30-something in his class? That's why I was like, oh, you know. So he's not the top guys, right? He's not one of those guys. But you think he can be a pro player in the NBA for sure? Okay. Very good.
Thank you.
That'll be something for us to watch. All right, guys. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs, and we will see you on Thursday. Take care.